Plenty hammers when I'm riding shoddy. Better use your manners when you talk about me. Ain't too hard to find me. I've been killing niggas, selling nothing left though. Tryna look a sicker than a strep though. Spend a bitch, you wanna give me pesos. Then myself, I gotta work next though. Spit out your crib right after I clean out your shit and then put all of your fucking money in the escrow. Fuck what you saying, I'm not the one that you play with. I think they really was thinking I was the next though. You thought wrong or you all gone?
All done.
I just might bring back Don Juan. I just might bring back Sean John. Tell P. Diddy that I'm on one. I'ma beat it down with a do-rag. Pussy ate out, just some popcorn. If I fuck with you, that's too bad. How you played out like the dance song. Ain't no bygones, be bygones. I should murder niggas when I buy guns. How you get stretched like nylon. This is my band, I'm Dylon.
What's up? What's good with it, everybody? We back again for another episode of the Pick and Roll Podcast. Sam, what's good?
What's good, world?
Sam sound a little upset, man. What's going on, man? Why you down in the dumps? Probably the same reason I'm feeling that way, but I don't sound it.
Yeah, man. My Blue Devils then lost 2 of 3.
Yeah, man. It's not looking good, man. But I'm glad you brought that up because that's actually our first segment is Duke related. And we'll start it off with our Pick and Roll Podcast fan poll of the week. Now, unless you've been under a rock, everybody has known exactly what's happened to Zion Williamson. He busted out of his shoe 33 seconds into the Duke and Carolina game, probably the biggest game he's ever played in his life, and messed up his knee. The diagnosis was a knee strain. So there was a lot of speculation going around. Should he sit? Should he play? This is a lot of people were concerned with the fact that the Duke tickets were going for as much as they were. They said that the only other sporting event that cost more, that a ticket cost more to, was the Super Bowl, which is insane. That being said, we decided to ask you guys, what should Zion Williamson do if he's able to return? Should he sit or should he play? This was obviously our most even result that we've had out of any pick and roll podcast poll. 50-50, even split down the middle. We had a lot of votes for this one too, so it wasn't just a few people voting. There was a lot of people that voted, and obviously people split it right down the middle. So I'll start off by asking you, Sam, what do you think he should do? Do you think he's better off sitting, or do you think he's better off playing?
I think he's better off playing. I honestly feel like if you were going to save yourself for the league, you should have never came to college in the first place.
Man, that's almost word for word what I have written.
Yeah, I mean, what's the point in saving yourself now? You're almost in March. The season's almost over with. You came to college to play. You knew what risk you were taking when you came. So I'm only on board with the save yourself for college thing if you was going to do that from the get-go. Like, if he never was going to come to college, okay, cool. I understand that. But once you come to college, I mean, I just don't understand the logic of now deciding you don't want to play anymore and quitting on your teammates in games that count.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I think the only way I would be okay with a player sitting out and resting himself and getting ready for the draft as if you had a serious injury happen early in the season and then toward tournament time you had the opportunity to come back. That's one similar to like a Kyrie Irving situation. He played in what, seven or eight games before he got injured, and then he missed the entire season and came back for one game in the tournament. So, in that situation, in a scenario like that, if he would have decided, nah, I think I'm arrested, I'm good, I would have been okay with the situation like that. But somebody like Zion, with the injury that he's had, that's considered day to day, like you said, if everybody that plays is one injury away from jeopardizing their career, so whether he suits up or not, he's still in the same predicament. He's still one injury away from ruining his career.
Yeah. So, like they said, you can get injured dribbling through cones and workouts too. I mean, it's a little
exactly.
It's a little less risk, but I mean,
anything you do is going to have some type of risk toward injury, unless right. you plan on laying in your bed until draft day.
And this ain't football we talking about.
Exactly. I agree 100%. And like I said, it's a knee sprain. So they're saying that he won.
Accident.
Exactly.
Something, a freak accident.
Something that you'll probably never see again. Like, it's that was insane. And I said I wouldn't be against him sitting out. I don't think I could go either way. If he decided to sit out, I would understand. But if he wanted to come back and play, I think that would be good as well. But now I'm definitely leaning more toward if he sat out, I would be like, why? Like, I would be confused because – As a guy like Zion, he seems to be a guy that loves his teammates. They all came to Duke with the same goal in mind, which was to win a championship. I can't see a guy like him deciding to shut himself down or to quit and just say, guys, I don't think I'm going to do it. Or I can't see him being brainwashed by his camp or anybody saying, you know
that's
what?
That's the only way I could see him shutting it down for the year is if he somehow – allow somebody from the outside to influence his decision a lot. Because Zion's not making that decision. Zion would have came back in the UNC game.
I agree 100%. I don't see much of a reason for him to sit out. Obviously, the masses, when it first happened, everybody was like, see, all that ticket money and these players not even being paid for that. So, shoot, if that's I'm him, I'm really sitting about. Out. But I understand that's been the underlying issue for years. The yeah, fact that players aren't being really – yes.
That's why people really saying that is because they're really just trying to jumpstart that argument again and basically going to try to highlight this situation and be like, well, he could have lost millions on that play right there. And that's what it's really about. Mm-hmm. It's not about Zion at all.
I agree. I think that's exactly what it is. But let's stay Duke, North Carolina, man. How good is Carolina? Are they really as good as they showed themselves to be against Duke, or was that just like a freak game? I'll go ahead and start this one off. I definitely don't want to sound like a hater at all, because as our listeners know, we're both Duke fans. I will say this. Carolina is a good team. They are a good team. I don't want to take nothing away from them. I don't want to say, oh, they only lost because Zion got hurt. Carolina played a phenomenal game against Duke. And granted, a lot of the success that they had obviously had to do with Zion not being there. A guy like who was it that was eating us up? Luke May and Cam Johnson. A guy like Luke May doesn't have quite as much success as he has with a Zion guarding him. Granted, you said coming into this game that he was going to have a big game. My rebuttal was, nah, Zion's too much of an athlete for him to get off. Well, we didn't even get to see that matchup at all. Luke May did what he did. Duke did what he does. Like you said, he's a guy that is experienced. He finds a way to affect the game. So I don't think that he would have not affected the game. I just don't think he would have been as effective because Duke put everybody that they could on him. He was just bigger than the guys that they had. They put Jack White on him. He could shoot over top of Jack White. They put R.J. Barrett on him. R.J. didn't have quite enough body. It's just – it was
– the reason why I say Luke May was going to do what he was going to do regardless is because he's a guy that you don't even really draw up no plays for, man. He's just going to get it done. He's too smart of a player. I hate his ass, but I gotta respect his game as a hoop fan. That guy can play basketball, man.
Yeah,
Zion was not about to stop him. Maybe he don't get 30 and 15.
He definitely doesn't get 30 and 15.
He was going to have 20 and 12 at least.
I don't even think he gets 12. Yeah, I can see the 20, but like it's really insane the way that Zion really controls the boards when he's on the court. I think a lot of his rebounds came from not boxing out, and you can tell that Duke players are almost accustomed to Zion grabbing everything that comes off the rim because they don't box out at all. They're used to him skying for everything or Marquise Bolden grabbing rebounds occasionally, but for majority of it, Zion controls the boards. So that I felt like that was a huge issue in that Duke and Carolina game, is that Carolina had a lot of second chance points. And back to the subject at hand, I do want to say that Carolina is a good team, but they're not as good as they looked against Duke. That was probably one of the most mentally flustered Duke teams that I've seen this entire year. Granted, it's an emotional game, so you're expecting the players to already be emotional. Then you throw in the fact that you're arguably your best player. A lot of people call him the best player. I don't believe that. The most effective player. Your most effective player is now no longer with you 33 seconds into the game. So now you're scrambling to try to find a new identity. And
not only that, he averages 22.4 points per game. That's 20 points a game gone at the very beginning of the game.
Right.
So now you got to find 22 points out of your lineup.
And it's the difficult part about finding 22 points out of your lineup is that Duke hadn't been shooting the ball great at all.
And another thing about Zion's points is they 22, but they feel like 42 because – five of them going to be demoralizing dunks,
right,
and offensive rebounds where you just like, shit. Like, that matters, bro. I don't understand why during that Carolina game I'm on Facebook and all I see is people like, Duke looked like a totally different team without Zion.
What do you expect? What do you
no
expect?
Shit. Exactly. He's the number one or number two player in the country.
Right.
Like, what the hell do you expect? Nate, give me a team who wasn't going to look different when they lose. Forget the best player in the country. They lose their best player. Who's not going to look different?
Yeah, that.
Don't even got to be the best in the country. Take the best player off Belmont, and they're going to look different. Or the second best. You're not going to look the same. Like, so why would we not? Why would we look the same or better?
Yeah.
Missing Zion. That doesn't even make sense.
A lot of people that were upsetting me, the posts that I was seeing were tailored toward that. But most of them were tailored toward, shoot, they got three other McDonald's All-Americans. They were three other McDonald's All-Americans. They should be able to do, they should be able to contain Carolina, do whatever. I can't stand that fucking statement. Like, that doesn't, what does that even mean? They got three other McDonald's All-Americans. Okay. Like,
for one, that title don't even mean nothing once you
get exactly. That's what I mean. Like, it's not even relevant anymore.
And for two, you don't just take a guy out the lineup at the end of the season and then guys just fall into order with the new pecking order immediately.
And not even in the end of the season, during the biggest game of the season. Like, I don't understand. Like, it's on the fly. It's not – you don't have no practice to adjust or nothing. It's literally on the fly.
Guys coming to the game comfortable in their role, and then next thing you know, like, oh, bro, you got
to
do more
today. Yeah, we need you to go out here and score about 15 today. You only average, what, six? Like,
it'd be the people who play sports and was good in it that be saying the dumbest shit sometimes, bro.
I agree.
Like, I just don't be understanding some of the things I be seeing out of these great athletes, well, people that I consider great athletes from around here. Like, what are you talking about?
I agree 100%. But let's just, hypothetically speaking, if Zion doesn't return, what will Duke have to do to be successful? We've already seen that they're going to have to change their identity, but what exactly is going to have to be done in order for them to get back to the level of success that they were having, or in order for them to be able to make a run?
That's the main thing, is find a new identity. And then I feel like we got to find an identity not only on offense, but on defense too, because that without Zion out there, that changes a lot. That's one position that we missing that can't switch.
Fact.
Or not as fluent. Like, our defense looks a lot different without him out there as well. And as everybody well knows, he also plays a rim protector for us a lot of the time too. So that's definitely affecting things as well. I mean, Zion, he's a big piece to be missing. But I don't think we can win at all without him. I think we can.
It's just going to be much more difficult.
Way more difficult. And guys are going to have to do more. It's like, Trey Jones going to have to start scoring the basketball, man. We can't keep having 2 for 14.
Yeah.
Hold on, let me see. What was he against Carolina? Trey Jones was 1 for 11 against Carolina. Him and Kobe White was going at it.
They were taking a lot out of themselves by defending each other the way that they were.
I felt like every freshman besides really RJ, even RJ early though, I think all the freshmen, the lights were just too bright.
Yeah.
For all of them. Everybody. None of the freshmen really played well at all. Like I said, RJ came along around the second half and late and ended up with 33, but I wasn't really all that impressed with his game.
I wasn't impressed by the 33 at all.
So I felt like this was the first time in a while that I've seen a freshman class on both sides of Duke and Carolina who really didn't really seem ready for that moment. It was kind of weird to see, but I mean, Carolina, obviously they had some more veterans, so they were able to weather the storm. I mean, damn, see, I'm looking at the box score. I didn't even realize Cam ended up with 27. Like, those guys, they didn't play well. I mean, the box score, you might look at it and think, and you might think otherwise, but I really didn't feel like those guys played very well at all. And Trey Jones, he was absolutely horrible tonight shooting the basketball as well, and he was terrible shooting it against Syracuse. Like, if Zion's going to be gone, we got to have that guy to put the ball in the hole somehow. You got to score. We need you.
Yeah, it's with him, it's almost funny because he's like the polar opposite of his brother when it comes to moments like this. Like, his brother wasn't the best defender, but if you needed a bucket in crunch time, or you needed a bucket or a string of buckets, period, Tyus could go out there and get you some buckets. When
we don't lose this game tonight.
Exactly.
Tyus lived for the moments where Ja and Justice wasn't doing what we needed, or it was time for us to get a clutch bucket. Tyus was like, shit, my time.
Fact. And it, like you said, it's crazy because as talented of a defender as he is, he just does not have that consistency on offense. And it's almost like, is he overdoing himself on defense to where he's lacking on offense due to fatigue, or is he really just not this good of an offensive player? I'm not sure which one it is yet, but I'm starting to get an idea of what it is. And the idea that I'm having is that he's not I think that he has the potential to be good offensively, but his game has not formed yet.
Yeah, he's not there. He doesn't have much of an offensive game right now.
Yeah, and he has the intangibles. He has what it takes to have a good offensive game. He has handles. He can beat you off the dribble. He has a nice floater. I just think he has to become more confident and establish himself as a shooter more. If he starts knocking down a three, he becomes an offensive threat because he can get by you. He can shoot floaters. He's beautiful with dishing a ball off once he does get into the painted area. But it's just a matter of when he's going to knock that three ball down to where it's going to make him more effective, make you come out there and play him so he can break the defense down. But, yeah, what I think, Duke, we're going to have to find that, and we're also going to have to get more out of our guys. We like Syracuse game. We had Alex O'Connell playing out of his mind. That we're going to need that more regularly, and we're also going to need Joey Baker to step up. I'm going to need Joey Baker to become more of a Grayson Allen type of guy in Grayson Allen's freshman year. Throughout the year, we didn't hear anything about Grayson. Come tournament time, he started to step up, and he had a bigger role. Joey Baker is now in that same position, and we're going to need to see more from him. Whether it be more effort defensively or knocking down clutch three-pointers, I think more than anything.
He ain't played all today.
He played.
He did. He played a couple minutes.
Yeah, he played a little bit because I remember seeing him out there. But more than anything, Duke is going to have to find consistency shooting the ball. This isn't just from the three-point line. This is mid-range jumpers. This is everything. As far as shooting the ball, Duke is going to have to find some consistency because we don't have anybody on our roster that I would consider a surefire knockdown three-point shooter. We have Cam Reddish who can be that. We also have Alex O'Connell, who can be that. But they're not consistent.
I think Alex O'Connell definitely is that. He just doesn't get the consistent enough minutes to put that on display. I think Alex O'Connell is definitely our best shooter. But like I said, he hasn't been getting the consistent minutes. And a lot of that has been because of him defensively. Mm-hmm. But with Zion out, I mean.
We have no other choice but to throw him out there now.
He's definitely that guy. Alex O'Connell, he could fill it up. He reminds me, now, don't get me wrong, he's not this guy, but he reminds me a lot of him, and that's Luke Kennard. Like, he's as far as, like, just the total package offensively.
You think?
Yes.
I don't think he's quite as crafty as Luke Kennard was offensively.
But we don't get to see O'Connell really put the ball on the floor, though. That's what I'm saying. Luke Kennard played for a mediocre team, really. We wasn't, especially offensively, we was an offensively challenged ball club. He was asked to do a lot. I feel like if you put O'Connell on that team, I think he could fill that role. He wouldn't be as efficient. Luke Kennard was crazy efficient. But
what was the team when he really went crazy? Who else was on that roster besides Grayson?
Who?
Luke Kennard. Was that the Brandon Ingram year?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. We did struggle offensively that year, and he really stepped into that role majorly.
But and I just feel like O'Connell, he's got the total package offensively, but I don't think we'll see much of that until next year.
I sure hope. I mean, I'm really hoping that we see that, but I don't know, man.
Period. We need guys to step up, man.
Yeah, more than anything, I just think that Duke is, in order to be successful, Duke's just going to have to, I guess, get more production out of the bench for one. Because what was it? Was it the Carolina game? I'm pretty sure it was the Carolina game. Or it might have been the Syracuse game. Whichever game it was, we had zero bench points for a long time. I want to say it was the Syracuse game.
We had no bench all year, though, really.
And that's the thing. When you lose a player like Zion, then you have to have that now.
I think guys got too comfortable. But it's time to get out of that now. I'm talking about the bench. Like, I feel like they just knew they ain't really have to do nothing. They was just
No. We ain't have Brandon Ingram.
What was it?
Luke Kennard was Tatum, Harry Giles, Frank Jackson. Matt Jones, Emil Jefferson.
That still was an offensively challenged team.
Though. Yeah, outside of Tatum, I would definitely agree. Then Jack White was on that squad, too.
That team had too much offensive firepower.
Yeah, we just couldn't find a way to use it. Because I'm like, sheesh. I'm looking at this roster like we could have made a run with this squad. But obviously, Harry Giles wasn't what he was supposed to be.
We had all them injuries.
Yeah. Chase Jeter wasn't what he was supposed to be. We lacked on the inside big time. But, yeah, man, let's move on. Let's move on to the NBA. Now, I've seen a lot of LeBron backlash for the first time in a long time. And a lot of it is centered around the Lakers' success. Granted, I do believe he's a huge part in why the Lakers aren't successful. But I don't want to say most popular, but it's starting to gain a lot of popularity as far as this topic is concerned. A lot of people are saying if LeBron James does not make the playoffs this year with the Los Angeles Lakers, he is in jeopardy of being the best player in the league. A lot of people are saying he'll no longer be the best player in the league if the Lakers don't make the playoffs. True or false?
I tend to kind of agree with that, honestly. Not just on LeBron, but just period. Like, how I just find it hard to believe that you would be the best player in the world at that time and you're not even in the playoffs if you're not injured. Like, I know he had the little injury, but he ain't missed that much time. Like, I don't know, man. It's going to be tough for me to sit here and call you the best player in the world when we got the playoffs going on and you're not even there.
I think LeBron's losing that title now. I don't think that it's going to take for the Lakers missing the playoffs for him to lose that title. If he continues to play the way he's playing right now, and the Lakers even somehow sneak into the playoffs, I think that title is still in jeopardy because he does not look like the best player in the world. He hasn't looked like the best player in the world. If you're asking me, he hasn't looked like the best player in the world the entire season.
I agree with you, but right now it kind of looked like he might be saving himself. But if he don't make the playoffs,
what's the point?
Exactly. So if he don't make the playoffs, then we don't. Because if he's saving himself and then they make the playoffs and then he turns into the Bron we see every year in the postseason, then we just going to forget all about the trash-ass regular season. We just going to be like, oh, he was just resting, getting ready for the postseason, and then he just turned into King James again. We'll forget all about this. But if he don't make the playoffs, then we're not forgetting it. We're not forgetting it. And I feel like that's where the playoffs come into play, is that he can redeem himself if he just goes out and eats in the playoffs like he always do.
To me, I agree with that, but I feel like being the best player in the world goes beyond what you're doing as a player, like just your physical attributes out there. Being the best player in the world, you're making your team better. For me, if the situation were to play out and LeBron really does decide to save himself and the Lakers find some type of other firepower on their roster and gain some leverage and make the playoffs and sneak into the playoffs, and then we see LeBron go crazy in the playoffs, it's really going to take something astronomical for me to feel like, okay, yeah, he's still the best player in the league. And by astronomical, I mean something as drastic as taking the Warriors to 7 games or winning your first round game as a 7th or 8th seed. Then I'm like, okay, I see it. Okay, yeah. But if they make it to the playoffs, he has a crazy first round, but they lose. No, you don't get no pass from me for saving yourself for the playoffs, because the ultimate goal was for you to affect the playoffs, and you didn't if you didn't make it past the first round. So let's say the Lakers make the playoffs. He plays whoever he plays in the first round. He averages 40 in the series, like goes bonkers, but they lose. No, you're in the same boat then as you are right now to me, as far as losing the title as the best player in the world. And okay. Go ahead.
I just wanted to ask a quick question. Like, I don't want to get off on a tangent on it or nothing. I just wanted to see who your answer was. So if you ain't got Bron as the best, who you got?
Right now?
Yeah.
Kevin Durant with a very close margin of Giannis.
Mm-hmm. I just wanted to see who you had. That my two.
Yeah, for a fact. I don't feel like you can go anywhere other than Kevin Durant. I mean, I think we've always said this. People are prisoners of the moment. So obviously people are going to James Harden, Paul George. Yeah, they look like the best right now, like at this very moment. But I don't consider them to be the best player in the world. I don't consider anybody else in the league better than Kevin Durant, than LeBron James. So that
I'm a person that feel like that title ain't always held, man.
Yeah, I can agree. And you've said that. You've gone on record saying that for years, that you honestly believe that sometimes there is not a best player in the league. Or you've said that with sports as well. Like you've said that with college football. Sometimes you feel like there's not a Heisman. There was not a Heisman winner. Like it's true. It definitely holds validity. But obviously, you know how Americans are. Somebody's got to be the best.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes it's so close that some of those guys is the best each and every night. It's only times like when you got a LeBron James or a Michael Jordan, are those guys hands down the best for years or multiple years to come. Like that's rare. I don't feel like it's just hard, man. It's just hard.
I agree. Cause I mean, you look back to the 90s, like everybody knew Michael Jordan was the best player, but then you had people that were filling it up night in, night out, a lot like right now. So
in the early 2000s too. Like,
yes, yes.
Would you hands down say that Shaq was like the best player in the league? Like hands down?
That's what I'm saying. It's so close. Like,
yeah, because I
maybe as for dominant stretches.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. As dominant as Shaq was, I like to lean a lot toward Allen Iverson in that time, man.
It's a bunch of guys.
Tracy McGrady.
I mean, you could just run down the list, man. I feel like sometimes that title was held in 3 to 4 week stretches.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but right now we got LeBron James, so he's holding that title for years. But that doesn't, like, there's not always a guy that's the best player in the league for a couple years. Like, I feel like people trying to hand that to Giannis. And I'm just really feeling like you got to pump the brakes on that a little bit.
Yeah, he's got to show a little more before I'm ready to give him that title.
Because I don't know, man. But, yeah.
It's hard for me to call you the best player in the league when you have a glaring weakness. Like, it's not that Giannis isn't a great player, but Giannis can't shoot to save his life. And this was a lot of the reason why during earlier years with LeBron, everybody wanted to give him that crown. LeBron, the best player in the league. LeBron, the best player in the league. LeBron was phenomenal, but his game wasn't well-rounded enough.
See, Stephen A. said that too. He said that you can't be the best player in the league if you don't have a total all-around game.
I agree.
I feel like wholeheartedly, Giannis might be the exception to that rule.
I agree because he affects the game in literally every other way, and his shooting does not it doesn't take away anything from his game.
And he'd dunk it from where most people would shoot it from any damn way.
Exactly. So I think that the biggest thing with Giannis, I agree with you 100% with him being an exception to the rule, is because, like I said, he doesn't have any other weakness on the court at all. With LeBron couldn't shoot at one point in time, and he also wasn't a stellar defender, which he's still not to me. And you can't have both of those things, like, as weaknesses and be considered the greatest player in the league at that point in time. There were so many other players that's like, I mean, hey, he's still great. Like, it's I don't know. Like, I feel like you say, Giannis may be the exception to the rule in that, like, he's probably the only person ever that is the exception to the rule without having a total arsenal in his game. So, yeah, but let's jump into a new segment that we have, man. This is called Start a Franchise. So I'm going to give you two players. You tell me which one you would rather start a franchise with and why. Why you would choose this person over the other. So our first two, we got Jason Tatum, Ben Simmons. Who are you starting your franchise with?
Ooh. I'm going to go with... I'm going with Jason Tatum.
Why?
I'm a Ben Simmons.
Yeah, that's
guy.
What I was about to say. Why not Ben? Because you are a Ben fan. You're a big time Ben Simmons fan.
Well, I'm also a big time Jason Tatum fan. And it's that Mamba mentality. It's just something you can't teach about that guy.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy that you said that, because that's obviously who I had. And for the exact same reason. Jason Tatum has stuff that you can't teach on that court.
My bad. Hold on. I'm watching this Raptors and Boston game.
What happened?
He missed the shot. But Gore Hayward just did Norman Powell. So bad.
Is he looking like he's back? I haven't watched Boston play too many times this year.
No, because the old Gordon Hayward would have made that shot. But, man, he just did him nasty, though. But – go ahead.
But yeah, I would go Tatum because of like you said, he's got stuff that you can't teach. But also along with that is if we're starting this NBA, if we're starting a franchise in today's NBA, you need a guy like Jason Tatum that can give you everything that he gives you on the court. We've seen Ben Simmons is super effective outside of shooting the ball. And we've seen in the playoffs people are literally giving him miles to shoot the ball, and he's not doing it. There are ways to scheme around, but minimizing his effectiveness because he can't shoot. With Jason Tatum, I don't think that there's anything you can do to really stop that man once he gets it rolling. He's got the total package, and like you said, he's got that mama mentality to where he feels like, once I step on this court, I don't care who is in front of me, you cannot stop me. He made that evident last year when there were stretches of the game where LeBron was guarding him, and he made it his point to go at LeBron. Like, I don't – who? All right, bet. I'm still going to get a bucket. Like, he made it look very nonchalant, and I just love his game. So, yeah, I'm definitely going Tatum too. Next to Donovan Mitchell, Luka Doncic.
We're not putting these two together. I mean, the team together, right? This is a new franchise.
Yeah, you're completely starting a new franchise, and you got these two guys on the table. Who are you taking?
I'm taking Luka. Man, I'm taking Luka because I just feel like he's just flat out better. He's bigger, and he can do literally everything that Donovan Mitchell can do. I just think he's a better player than Donovan Mitchell, flat out.
Yeah, this was probably the easier one for me, mostly because of what you said. Like, he has everything that Donovan Mitchell has, and I think overall he's a better player, not to mention he's bigger. So I'm taking Luka as well. I'm probably taking Luka over a few guys to start a franchise, if we're being honest.
For real.
Like, he's that deal. He's definitely the guy that I feel like I would start a franchise with. Next to two Blue Devils, Zion or RJ, coming out of the draft, you got the number one pick. Who are you taking and why?
I'm taking RJ Barrett. I think it's going to sound crazy, but I think the ceiling's a little bit higher, man. I really do. I think RJ can be a James Harden type of scorer in the NBA. I think that he can be a guy that averages well over 25 for multiple years without even batting an eye. I think he's that type of scorer. I just think he's just a walking bucket. He can't even score with his right hand or go right now, and nobody can even really stop him yet. Once he gets a couple years in the NBA to where the scouting report makes him start doing stuff that he's not used to, and he starts getting used to doing those things too, he's just going to be a real problem, man. And then you add on top of that that he's not even a real consistent jump shooter yet, but you know he will be. Man, I think RJ is definitely going to be a perennial all-star in the league. Not saying Zion's not, but I think RJ, with scoring being as valued as it is today, I think you just got to go RJ Barrett, man.
Reason why I decided to use these two is because popular opinion is showing that Zion's the hands-down favorite to be the number one pick. If anybody picks anybody other than Zion, they're making a mistake. I say that if you hand me an organization right now, I'm taking RJ Barrett with the number one pick because of everything you said. But the thing that I love the most about RJ Barrett is that, like you said, his weakness is his shooting. But RJ Barrett does not fear shooting the ball. You look at a guy like Ben Simmons who knows he can't shoot. So if you give him endless space, he's probably still not going to shoot. RJ Barrett is a guy who's not a great shooter, but he still takes the shots. He has enough confidence to show, I'm still taking this shot, which shows that he wants to be a good shooter.
It shows that he wants,
exactly. He's confident in his shooting, which is only going to grow with him becoming better at it. So he's got the entire arsenal. I love the James Harden reference because I can definitely see him being that type of scorer as well. But beyond that, I see RJ Barrett right now at this moment being as well-rounded as James Harden is offensively right now. When James Harden first came in the league, he wasn't as good of a facilitator as he is now. RJ Barrett is that already. I don't know if a lot of people don't really watch Duke as often or haven't watched RJ Barrett, but he is a phenomenal facilitator. He excels at that. So along with his scoring, he also knows how to get his teammates involved and make them better. So I'm taking RJ because I feel like he's got the better upside. I think, like, everything you're seeing from Zion right now is what you're going to get in the league. I don't think he's going to get any better. He may improve his jump shot a little more, but there's not much more he can add to his game to make himself better. RJ Barrett can, and at this point in time, RJ Barrett is a better player than Zion is. Zion's more effective and can definitely do things on a court that change the game. But as far as the better player, RJ Barrett's the better player right now, and I think he'll continue to be that. So that's my pick as well.
In people's defense, and the people, like all the GMs who say Zion over RJ, one thing you got to take into account when you're a GM is ticket sales mm-hmm. and buzz around your team.
Mm-hmm.
And then in that aspect, with the players being as close as they are in talent, really, and then you add that factor in for Zion, and then RJ don't really have that at all, especially compared to Zion. I can see why people were saying Zion, because, I mean, it's not like RJ's, like, way better than Zion or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, it's not like I don't understand why people are saying Zion Williamson, especially if you take it into account the box office part of it.
Yeah, I get it 100%.
Yeah, so it's not like we sitting here saying, like, Zion ain't nowhere near RJ and people making a mistake or nothing. I get the RJ Barrett, Zion pick at number one. I just personally will go with RJ Barrett.
I agree 100%. And those are my sentiments exactly. So next up, LeBron James or Magic Johnson?
No, that's not hard for me at all. I mean, I like Magic, but goodness, give me LeBron. Easy. Mm. Do I really got to say why?
No, not really. I feel like if you would have went the other way, you would have had to say why. And that's exactly what I'm about to do. Give me Mr. Johnson for the simple fact that Magic. Now I'm going back a little bit because I'm starting to think about some Magic moments.
Yeah.
Give me LeBron. Give me LeBron. I initially had Magic because of the way Magic came in the NBA and affected the game. His rookie year having to play center in the finals and winning the finals as a center. That was extremely impressive to me. Granted, I feel like if LeBron was in that situation, he could have done the same thing. Biggest thing for me, the reason why I'm not taking Magic is because of the blunders that Magic Johnson had. Him and LeBron were extremely similar in their big moments. They both had moments to where they were supposed to be that guy, and they just did not close the deal. And for that reason, I got to go with LeBron, because that was LeBron's only weakness, was that he didn't know how to close games out. And that wasn't even the case majority of the time. He had his moments where he didn't close out games. As a whole, LeBron James was a monster when he came in the league, man. And to see what he's evolved into now, I feel like it's a lot easier to make the decision based off of what we've seen from LeBron. So I'm taking LeBron as well. That was a little something for our listeners, though, because I'm sure a lot of the old heads, I'm taking Magic.
I know GK taking Magic for sure.
Ain't that his favorite player?
Yeah.
Yeah, GK's taking Magic too. So, yeah, I got to go with LeBron. I was leaning toward Magic, but the more I thought about it, I got to go with LeBron, man. How can you not start a franchise with a guy like LeBron? Last one. Tim Duncan or Kevin Garnett?
This is the one I struggled
with. Me too.
Because at first, as soon as you said the question, as soon as I read it earlier, it's like, Timmy D. Give me Timmy D. Then I'm like, damn, KG, though. Especially in this NBA.
Yeah.
But then I just be like, damn, Timmy D has something about him. Like, people want to give it all to Pop, but, man, KD, Timmy D was a winner, man.
That man, man. that was the deciding factor for me.
It's not like I think he got all those rings by himself, man. But Timmy D is a winner. That guy is just a winner.
Timmy D's got five of them. So you're gonna try to tell me that Timmy D is not responsible for at least two or three of them.
Exactly.
And KG only got one. And you can really make the argument that he's not the reason for that either.
He wasn't.
So, I mean, I mean,
he was a reason.
Yeah, but he wasn't the. So, I got to go with Timmy D for that reason. But like you said, if we're in this NBA, everything is pointing toward KG, except for the fact that Timmy D knew how to win. Timmy D was the guy that it didn't matter what you threw at him. He didn't get flustered. Timmy D was really a guy who could do whatever he wanted to on the court. And I don't think people really understand that. Like, a lot of people, we had this discussion a while ago on our podcast about KG and Timmy D, if I'm not mistaken. And the biggest thing was that Kevin Garnett is, he's the more appealing guy. When you watch basketball, he's the guy you want to watch because he's exciting. Timmy D is that guy that's doing the exact same thing that Kevin Garnett is doing. It just doesn't look as pretty. So that's why I got to go with Timmy D. I'm not looking for somebody that's going to make things look pretty. I'm looking for the guy that's going to go out there and do what I need him to do and win the ball game. So for that reason, I'm going with Timmy D. I personally think Timmy D doesn't get enough credit for how dominant of a player he was.
And it's unfortunate because it's sad that when you play for a good coach, like it's like you don't get no credit. But then Michael Jordan,
right?
You know what I'm saying? Like it's just weird.
Kobe and Shaq too.
They don't get no, like Phil don't get no credit, but all the rest of the good coaches get all the credit.
Agreed.
It's weird. It's like people pick and choose when, well, we already know that, so I don't know.
Yeah. All right, so last NBA topic. Let's say you had to name your top five NBA teams of all time. What would that list look like?
At number five, I'm going to 86 Celtics. Number four, Showtime Lakers. Number three, I got the 2017 Warriors. The first year KD was there.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, I got the 01 Lakers. And number one, I got the 96 Bulls.
Wow.
Which I'm pretty sure you probably knew my list.
Yeah, because it's my list.
In that order, though?
Nah, go ahead.
I'm about to say, I feel like you got yours a couple teams switched around. I know for a fact who you got at one, so that means I know who you got at two as well. And then
Who you think I got at one and two?
The 01 Lakers at one. And the Bulls at two?
Negative.
Oh, okay. All right.
So, I had an honorable mention squad, too. A team that I don't believe gets their just due. My honorable mention team was actually the 08 Lakers. And it's surprising to a lot of people. But if you look at that team, you had a guy in Andrew Bynum who was in the discussion for being the best big man in the league. With Dwight Howard. You got Pau Gasol, who was Pau Gasol. We all know what he can be. You had Lamar Odom, Sixth Man of the Year. You had the Mamba, obviously. You had a young guy in Trevor Ariza, who was becoming exactly what he is today. You also throw in a guy like Shannon Brown, who was playing out of his mind. That was literally his best span of basketball was in that year. If it wasn't for that year, the name Shannon Brown wouldn't ring bells. You could say Shannon Brown and people would be like, who? But because of that year, people know who Shannon Brown is. You also had your Derek Fisher, obviously. And who else was on that team? I want to say Jordan Farmer was the backup point guard. He was playing exceptional as well. But that team dominated the NBA in a way that a lot of people didn't believe they could. And I was coming fresh off of just getting smacked up by the Boston Celtics, the big three. So that team is my honorable mention. Number five, 86 Celtics, just like you did. Number four, I actually got the 01 Lakers there. I don't have them that high on my list, mostly because Kobe and Shaq, yes, they spearheaded that team, but you take Kobe and Shaq away, that team is pretty subpar to me. Third, I got the 87 Lakers. That's Magic, Kareem, Cooper, Thompson, Byron Scott. I mean, they were deep, super deep. They're number three. Number two, I actually got the 2017 Warriors. Number one, of course, 96 Bulls. But I say that to say this. I have these listed in this particular order, but if I match these teams up to play against one another, I feel like...
See, that's how I made my list.
Yeah, see, I didn't make mine like that. I made mine off of what I saw, the eye test. But I feel like if you line these teams up, it's a completely different outcome. If you line these teams up, I do believe the 01 Lakers and the 96 Bulls come out on top in the championship.
Because I was looking at it like, I would definitely say that on paper, the Warriors is definitely one or two on the list. Mm-hmm. But I felt like if you match them up with that Lakers team, I feel like they would have a whole world of issues with Shaquille O'Neal.
Mm-hmm.
That just really, I think, would be something they wouldn't be able to overcome. So that's why I got them at three and the Lakers, 0-1 Lakers at two.
Yeah.
Because I looked at it as
head-to-heads.
Head-to-heads, yeah.
And I can agree. If I would have looked at it head-to-heads as well, if that's how I would have made my list, I tried to stay away from making my list as head-to-heads because I knew how it was going to play out. Like you said, you could have pinpointed my list if we were going head-to-head. But I tried to stay away from it. I tried to take that out of the equation for the simple fact that I wanted these teams to shine in exactly what they did in their era. And the reason why I went Bulls and Warriors 1 and 2 was because of what the Bulls did. I actually almost had the Bulls on here twice. The Bulls almost made it again for the following year when they almost turned around and won 70 games again. They won 69 the following year. So they almost made my list as well, along with the 71 Bucks. Reason why I didn't do that is because a lot of people in our era or our decade don't know much about that team. But that team was pretty good. They think it was it Cunningham? Obviously Kareem, the Big O. Like that team was pretty loaded as far as scores were concerned and everything. So they almost made the list as well. But yeah, man, that pretty much does it for basketball. But before we get out of here, let's touch on one thing real quick, man. NFL, Le'Veon Bell is officially a free agent. And the Steelers decided not to use the franchise tag, which it obviously looks like their team is just about to completely fall apart. But where do you see being the ideal destination for Le'Veon Bell? If you had to pick one team in the NFL right now for Le'Veon to go to, or if you're Le'Veon Bell and you got the entire NFL right in front of you, what team do you choose?
Houston.
Bingo. That's exactly who I had.
For real?
Yes. I said it on Facebook a few days ago.
I thought you would say Seattle.
Nah, I don't like Seattle for him at all because I don't feel like their offensive scheme fits Le'Veon. I like a team like Houston. The only two teams that I could see Le'Veon going to and it being a perfect fit are one, Houston, two, Indianapolis. Because you would be going down playing with a guy like Andrew Luck, who is a proven quarterback, and you don't have to worry about having the entire load on you. But in those games, obviously, you would be that guy. You would be the focal point because he doesn't have primary receivers. He has T.Y. Hilton, but T.Y. Hilton is banged up a lot, and he's a little inconsistent at times. So obviously, you would be the focal point in the offense. And Indianapolis is getting back to more of a run-heavy scheme. And that would be an ideal fit. But I just can't see anywhere being a better fit than Houston. I think Houston would be fun for him. I think Houston would be much more dangerous. I think that their scheme fits. That's All they were missing this year was a running back, a guy like Le'Veon. That's what would have taken them to the next level. They've got D-Hop out there who's doing exactly what everybody expected him to do. Deshaun Watson coming into the guy that he's supposed to be. And in the NFL where run-pass option is starting to become more of a thing, I don't think Le'Veon could be more effective anywhere than here. I think him and Deshaun Watson in the same backfield would be scary.
Hell yeah. So what you don't think about since they might be about to open up their offense too, what about the Ravens?
I think the Ravens will be cool, but if he goes to Baltimore, I actually have Baltimore on my list because of the fact that they were in the same division as Pittsburgh, and that would be the ultimate get back for him. But I feel like they're a few pieces away from actually being where they need to be. We saw that their offensive line couldn't protect Lamar to save their life.
Right.
Le'Veon's not going to have much of an offensive line to block for him if he goes down there. Granted, he doesn't need much of it because of how agile he is. But I think you go down there and play for a team like that, it's going to dampen your chances of getting that big money because you're going to get banged up playing behind an offensive line like that. But I like him and Lamar together.
You don't like Kansas City?
I love Kansas City. I just think that it's a little far-fetched because they're going to have some guys that are coming up on contract years here soon, and they're going to have to pay those guys. I think if you go to Kansas City, you can book it. They're winning the Super Bowl. But
yes.
I mean, it's that apparent. But I think that Le'Veon stays away from there because I think – a portion of Le'Veon, he's got a bit of an ego thing with him. And I think if he can't – I don't think it will benefit him going down – I don't think he thinks going down to play with the reigning MVP is going to help him. I think he'll be overshadowed in that offense. That offense is all about Mahomes and his arm, how skilled he is passing the ball, and Tyreek Hill. So I think Le'Veon would be – a 100% perfect fit. You plug him in there, it's a Super Bowl. But I think because of his ego, he won't go there.
Yeah, I feel what you're saying.
But yeah, man, that pretty much does it for the episode. Is there anything you want to say to the listeners before we got out of here?
Oh, yeah. Boogie. What was it? He's the first big man to have I think it was 20-10 for either once or three. I don't know. He was the first big man to do 20-10 since 2010. It was Andres Beidrons.
Really?
Yeah.
That's crazy. I mean, not crazy. Too crazy because the Warriors haven't really had much of a big man, but that's crazy.
Not even one of your backup centers that went for 20-10
in
almost 10 whole years. That's wild.
That is. That's insanely crazy. Let's see. It was something I wanted to say before we got out of here. Don't look now, but Paul George is making this MVP race a lot closer than people want to believe. To me right now, Paul George is my MVP just because of what he's doing down in OKC. He's really, he's opening eyes and doing it in a way that he's making that ball club so much better. So, shout out MVP G13. I would love to see him win the MVP this year. I feel like that would be the ultimate redemption for a guy like him.
He's been wilding this year.
Most definitely. Also, shout out Derrick Rose. Derrick Rose may become the first player in NBA history to win an MVP and comeback player of the year. That has never happened. So that would be phenomenal. But outside of that, yeah, man, that pretty much does it. Oh. I couldn't get out of here without saying this. College basketball fans, make sure y'all check out Duquesne. Tavian Dunn-Martin from Huntington, West Virginia. He's coming into this guy that everybody from West Virginia knew he could be this guy. He's starting to show it to the nation now. So if you haven't caught a Duquesne game, Make sure you check him out. He's something special. He's fun to watch. Definitely.
Always has been.
Yeah, most definitely. I remember the first time you told me about him. It was after that basketball camp that you was running.
Hell yeah. He was very, he was in there with them high school kids, and he was in like the sixth or seventh grade. He went for 40.
Yeah, so.
It was kids from Ohio, Kentucky, and Virginia.
Who don't know or who was skeptical about checking him out, that should give you all the ammo to go check him out now. Sixth grader playing with high school kids dropping 40. He's not shy to filling it up because he's dropped 40 multiple times throughout his life, AAU, high school, whatever. So, yeah, check out Duquesne, Tavian Dunn Martin, little point guard. He's probably the smallest guy out there. So, check him out. But, yeah, man, that pretty much does it for our episode. Signing out, it's your boy Ish.
And it's your boy Sam. Appreciate y'all.
We out.